More now on the release of the Iraq Study Group's report, a talk with our two regular guest political observers, E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and David Brooks of The New York Times. Welcome to both of you.
Thank
Good
you.
To be here.
Let me ask you first, E.J., how would you assess the, first of all, the general importance of the release of this book, offering guidance as to where to go next with Iraq?
Well, I think it's very important for its description of what's happening in Iraq. It's a really devastating account. The first sentence, the situation in Iraq is grave and deteriorating. In very clear, plain language, it says Iraq is a mess. And I think that really is a good thing because it gets in the way of a kind of propaganda that we can, well, if not stay the course, because that's not their policy anymore, sort of stay the course. I think this sobers everyone up. In terms of its policy proposals, I think a lot of people are going to look at this and say, 2 years and out. Yes, they say they would leave troops there longer to protect forces if everything went well. But there's a really strong lever in here where they say that if the Iraqi government doesn't do a whole lot of things, and the list is pretty long, then the United States will sort of pull backwards. So I think this really takes the arrow, which 6 months ago in our politics was indicating that we were going to stay in Iraq in a while, and points the arrow toward getting out.
David Brooks, what do you think about that? That first of all, the descriptive role of this report is very important, and what do you make of the prescriptive dimension of it?
Well, I think what it does is it creates a center of debate. First of all, I think everybody, except for maybe George Bush, understands how dire the situation is, and I think everybody's going to buy their description. But it serves an important domestic purpose, which is it is the center of debate. It doesn't want us to withdraw as imminently as people as like Jack Murtha want. It doesn't want us to stay forever, as maybe the president wants us to stay. But it presents a timeline of reasonably long period of time when we will have tens of thousands of troops there, stretching at least 2 years, and maybe much after that, with some drawdown. So domestically, it creates a center for the debate to revolve around. The real question for me is, what does it have to do with Iraq? It's been really attacked quite harshly by military experts who don't see it as a realistic way to secure Baghdad.
I'd like to hear from both of you what you make of this phenomenon of a bipartisan commission or study group which is touting its ability to arrive at consensus very proudly. We're Democrats, Republicans, we can agree. And they have written a report that is a devastating criticism of the administration's Iraq war policy, its broader Middle East policy, its view of diplomacy and which nations you talk to and which nations you don't talk to, and how it handles relations with the other party at Washington, it seems. It is a rather harsh message to be delivered from an unelected group of people who used to hold office for the man who currently holds the highest office in the land. Wouldn't you agree, David?
Not entirely. I mean, a lot of things they want to do, the administration has wanted in an ideal world to do for a long time. The administration has come up with plan after plan, which calls for us to scale back as soon as the Iraqis scale up. The administration has for a long time tried to embed troops and to try to train more troops, not particularly effectively, but they can completely embrace those parts of the report. The parts that will be harder to swallow for the administration will be negotiating with Syria and particularly negotiating with Iran. And their arguments against negotiating with Iran are twofold. First, they say, if we want to get Iran to not develop nuclear weapons, the only thing we can offer is to talk to them. And if we talk to them without making them make a promise about the nuclear weapons, then we've given up our one carrot. So why do we want to give that away? And the second reason they object to talking about Iran are that the Saudis will go crazy. The entire Sunni world will think we are negotiating with the Shia world from a position of weakness, and we're just going to leave with a Shia regime strengthened. Now, those are all answerable, and Baker and Hamilton and the commission do have answers for those. But as far as the administration is concerned, parts they will embrace, parts they'll have some trouble with.
But actually, Robert, I agree with you that I think it's remarkable that a group that includes Ed Meese and Sandra Day O'Connor and James Baker, a couple of other Republicans, Larry Eagleburger, would come up with such a devastating critique of almost everything the administration has done and make these suggestions, for example, as David said, the discussions with Syria and Iraq that are so contrary to where the administration has been. I really think that shows how much the debate has moved. And I think this will make it much harder in the future if the Republicans want to blame the Democrats for pulling out of Iraq prematurely. Well, this says, no, the mess was created before the Democrats even got control of the Congress. And I think it has the political effect of getting letting a lot of Democrats off the hook in the future, which is why, on the whole, Democrats have embraced
the report. I don't see why, because one of the things it does, as I said, it completely guts the MIRTHA position that we should get out of Iraq anytime soon. Secondly, it involves increasing spending on other things in Iraq, in some ways increasing, if things go well, our presence in Iraq. So it is not a rapid withdrawal force of the way many Democrats talk about it.
Right, but there isn't now, and it's unlikely to be before the next election, the support in Congress for a rapid withdrawal. So I think a lot of Democrats can more or less embrace this, say we'd like to get out faster. They can disagree with this or that, but say, you know, if the president can't do this plan, which is bipartisan in nature, then the problem is on his doorstep, not on the Democratic doorstep.
I'm curious to hear from both of you about a phenomenon that we've seen yesterday and today, and I think it happened when the 9/11 Commission report was issued, which is this enormous praise and, to some degree, self-praise of a group that is bipartisan and achieves unanimity in contrast to what is then described as the bickering or the name-calling of our partisan politics. I mean, we have a two-party system. We assume parties are going to argue with each other. I'm just curious what you make of the statements that this policy will only succeed if the entire country gets behind the policy and that there is some enormous value in seeing this unanimity achieved.
I'd say two things are happening. First, people are so sick of the way politics is conducted, especially on Capitol Hill, they want some extra political means to make decisions, which these reports, these commissions are. The second and bigger picture is that for 30 years we've had a wave of anti-establishment movements. Now what we have is the restoration of the establishment of a 1950s-style group of old, mostly white men who make decisions, and now the establishment is back. It's like the best and the brightest, or the wise men, coming back to run the country.
EJ?
You know, whenever I hear the talk about everybody should fall behind this centrist establishment, I'm inclined to begin to defend right. bickering and partisanship, because there's something deeply anti-democratic about parts of that impulse. What I think is happening here is that so many Americans are looking for a reasonable path out of Iraq. And whatever one says of this group of people, they seem to be a reasonable and highly experienced group of people. And so people are willing to listen to them because this sounds more reasonable than anything certainly they've heard from the administration.
Well, thanks for bickering so reasonably with each other for our benefit. E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and the Brookings Institution, and David Brooks of The New York Times. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.